The views expressed in this interview are those of the individuals and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, or the Naval Postgraduate School. Welcome to the Trident Room, brewer of stout conversation, unfiltered and on tap. In today's episode, host Elena Youngblood goes below the surface with new host Anthony Castillo and gets to know him a little better.
Hey friends, this is Commander Elena Youngblood, and I'm sitting here with a new host, Lieutenant Anthony Castillo.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for coming out and doing this Below the Surface episode. We like to do these with our new host to get to know you, and so that you can tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background, your history, what's important to you, and maybe set a little persona for your future episodes. So while we are doing that, let's get started with what are you doing here at NPS? How did you get here?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Rather a circuitous route to get where I'm at right now. So I'm going to start from the end here at NPS and then move backwards. So currently, I'm an information science PhD student, still trying to figure out exactly what I want to study for my fifth area. But ostensibly, I'm looking at artificial intelligence within the healthcare domain, understanding that's more of a kind of a buzzword right now.
What do you mean by your fifth area?
For the information science department, we cover four core courses. And then beyond that, we get to decide exactly what do we want to focus on. So information science is a rather large and multidisciplinary domain, encompasses a lot of different things. So we've had previous students who focused on organizational management, information sciences, data sciences, things of that nature. So it's kind of a choose your own adventure almost exactly for what we want to do. Of course, we still have to output a dissertation and have contribute to the body of knowledge, of course. But at this point, still trying to figure out exactly what that is. But prior to that, though, I actually was a master's student here. So I had the opportunity to stick around here just a little bit longer. Someone has to do some arduous duty here in Monterey.
Someone has to do it.
So that's where I'm at right now.
Okay, awesome. So we actually have that similar background. We were talking about that earlier, that I, too, was a master's degree student here, but I left for a little bit and then came back for my PhD. Done my written, looking at my oral. So we're kind of both in that beginning period. Okay, so you got here at NPS in that way. What has the rest of your career been like? What have you done? How did you start? That kind of thing.
I enlisted in 2009. Sounds crazy to think about it right now. It's all flying by.
That's fine. I commissioned in 2009. Don't tell anybody.
You're 15 right now. It's crazy to think about. But yeah, I enlisted in 2009 as electrician's mate. I went through boot camp in the dead of winter over at Great Lakes. It was fun. It was cold coming from California. It definitely was a wake-up call, at least from Southern California. In regards to that, went to the nuclear pipeline, and through that, got picked up very quickly to go through the State 21 program and went to the Citadel to study both electrical engineering and mathematics, with focus mostly on mathematical modeling for that. Yeah, so a lot of nerd stuff that I really enjoy, and of course, balancing that with other things. Then after that, I went to 7th Fleet, where I was the strike officer, was also the CE division officer as well over there.
Quick question, what years were those?
From 2009 to approximately 2017. That spans about the career timeline for first coming into...
For Japan.
Oh, for Japan, yeah. Was about 2014 to 2017. I did a fellowship actually in Philadelphia, in Balakinwood. So I joined the 7th Fleet a little bit after my graduation time, which was May, roughly 2014.
Okay. We missed each other. I was there from 2009 to 2011.
Oh, great. Yeah. Wonderful tour. Definitely had a great time there. Didn't really get to speak very much Japanese. I was on a destroyer, so we were very, very busy, very, very operational. But for any of the listeners who haven't been out to 7th Fleet, I would highly recommend if you have a chance. I'm sure you can concur with that.
Yes. Very busy. Also a destroyer. The food is amazing, though.
The 7-Elevens are amazing.
They are the best.
I miss the 7-Elevens. They're much different. Listeners here don't know that. Very much different than the United States, where 7-Eleven food is just phenomenal over there in Japan.
And you can pay your bills.
That's right. They pay your bills as well. That's right. In addition, I didn't have a family at the time or have family at all, but they're very, very helpful in regards to having a family there. So if you do have a family and you're kind of worried about if I want to go there, how's that going to work? Very, very accommodating, a very small community there, but they do so much for the service members there. For MWR, cheap tickets to wherever you want to go. That is if you're not on a destroyer, you're not forward deployed all the time.
Yeah, those of us on the destroyer, we partook a little bit, but definitely support for the families for sure.
Yeah, so after that, coming back from 7th Fleet, I was at the nuclear pipeline officer this time in Charleston, and I was there for quite some time. Just had some issues with the boat that I was training on. Finally finished up, the boat was available for us to certify ourselves as propulsion plant operators, and then went to the Ford, the newest one in the fleet at the time, prior to their sea trials. So it was commissioned, but we still had a lot of testing to go down in the bowels of the ship and reactor. Very, very operational, different kind of sense, very technically demanding, but it was a wonderful tour in regards to leading people, learning technical skills, things of that nature. I had really good mentors at the time, and I was able to talk to them about what my career goals were. And I knew from other mentors, they would ask me, you know, what does your boss's boss do? That was a question they would ask me, you know, you need to think about that. What does your boss's boss do? And is that what you want? And so I had really good mentors and bosses who understood that and asked me the same question too, like, what do you want and what do you want to get out of this? So instead of continuing on as a conventional SWO or as a SWO nuclear type as I was before, I went to the Comfort actually during COVID times towards the tail end and helped revitalize some of the issues they had on that ship. I was on the Comfort.
So you were actually on the Comfort during the COVID, or at least the tail end, you said?
That's right. That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience. And it's very interesting because it's a huge ship. It's an amphib-sized ship. And you still have to take care of everything, even if you don't have the crew there, because the way it operates is what's known as a ROS, a reduced operating status, meaning that unless you're deployed or activated, then you have a crew size that goes from thousands to like hundreds. Yeah, but you still manage the same programs and things like that. It was a very interesting experience. And you have a ship's master who's the civilian mariner type, who's actually in charge of propulsion, driving the ship, things like that. And then you have the CO of the medical treatment facility Comfort, which was I was attached to, who's in charge of the medical part of it. So two commands, two bosses, very interesting to kind of have that aspect of it. But I own things across the entire ship. So the network, the health network, IT type, aviation, oxygen production, security, I mean, you name it. Basically everything that wasn't medical, I owned. So it was quite a bit, yeah. But it was a great experience, like I said, and it was a really cool opportunity, especially when we activated to go from my department, which was, you know, maybe 20, 30, 40 people, depending on the flux of what we needed, to suddenly hundreds of people. So it was a great experience to go through those different stages.
Was it hard to integrate that flux into the team atmosphere or the ship's company type of atmosphere or your division? Was that a tough challenge?
It was a challenging experience, but we had a great team and a great crew to walk through those different processes, forming, storming, norming, forming, adjourning, those different stages, right? So of course, there's going to be some issues that you're going to have initially standing up. And I was also the Simio at the time, too.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes. For the listeners, command, manage, equal opportunity, manager. And basically what that is somebody that ensures that we don't have any issues on board the ship in regards to fraternization, also including things such as ensuring just no discrimination, any issues with sexual harassment. But as soon as it turns into sexual assault, that's a different story. I don't own that, obviously. But the good thing about, I guess, having both of those hats was to be able to be not just a mentor to some of the sailors, but also understand what was happening throughout the ship. So get a pulse of what the morale was like, and then feed that back up to the triad. And for the listeners, the triad stands for the CO, the commanding officer. It was composed of the commanding officer, the executive officer, the XO, and then the command master chief, the CMC. So it was a really cool experience to go through that. But to get back to your question, of course, it was challenging, but had a great team, and we ensured that we were able to keep our eye on the mission, because the Comfort really is a national asset. And quite frankly, not a lot of people really know about it or really knew about it really prior to COVID times. And then once it was on the news, it became more in the national psyche or zeitgeist of what the ship is for. But the ships, both of them, the Mercy, it's a Mercy class. The Mercy is over in San Diego, the Comfort in Norfolk, where I was at the time. They both deploy and do soft power throughout the various regions. So the Comfort does soft power through South America, the Caribbean, and what does that entail? It entails going to a country, doing optometry, doing dental, doing humanitarian work, things of that nature. And similarly, the Mercy does their own also exercises, MERSEX and COMFEX respectively, out in the Pacific, so Palau, things like that. Building those relationships that we do need to establish beyond a hard power, such as more kinetic, such as missiles, things like that, though. So for instance, for the Mercy, they did a visit to Palau around the same time that we're establishing more presence in Palau. So it helps with some of these diplomatic connections as well.
Very interesting. I actually saw, I'm not sure if you were on it, but I definitely saw in the tail end of COVID, the Comfort go out from my house. I could see the bay. We could see the ships going in and out. I'm like, oh. So it was really kind of cool to see something that you don't see every day, a ship of that nature, going out and being deployed. What did you do after the Comfort?
After the Comfort, I ended up lateral transferring to the Medical Service Corps community. So it was a prior SWO nuke, now Medical Service Corps.
Was it the Comfort tour that helped make that decision or helped that make that transfer? Or were you thinking about it before?
On the slate, I had an opportunity to choose my shore tour, quote unquote, and a lot of what was available was more operational. So technically, the Comfort was my shore tour, even though I was going out to sea and getting, you know, CPA, of course. But on the top of my list was always something challenging for myself. I always wanted to ensure that I was doing something that not only assisted me career progression-wise, technically, leadership qualities, things of that nature, but also giving back ultimately to the organization I'm a part of, which is the Navy. And combining all of those, I saw the Comfort as an opportunity to do something while I still kind of figure out what my career progression could be, where I want to pivot to myself. So I came to the Comfort really kind of with an open mind, understanding that it was more of a stepping stone towards something else, whatever that may be. But being on the Comfort helped me connect to other people within the Medical Service Corps, which I actually really didn't know much about up until that. And for the listeners, Medical Service Corps is a very large group. There's different corps within the Navy, aviation, EDO, so engineering duty officers, surface warfare officers, SWOs, right? Those are different communities within the Navy. And it also includes medical, which is a large organization in itself. So you have medical corps, which is doctors, surgeons, things like that. And you also have Medical Service Corps, which is a large organization, includes healthcare administrators, various other people within that. And being in charge of what I was on the Comfort, it connected me with a subspecialty within the Medical Service Corps, which is 1803 types. The 1803 is a subspecialty designator. And they are health informatics specialists. So it's IT, information technology, but for healthcare. So it's very unique, the things you have to set up. So you have certain requirements that you have to meet, not just cybersecurity, right? But privacy as well, things of that nature.
The PII type?
That's right. Yep. Personal identifiable information. Yeah, PII. That's right. So with that, it connected me with different people within this community. And it was just the timing, right place, right time. And it aligned with my goals and what I wanted to do. So I lat transferred into the community, Medical Service Corps, and lat transferring some of the stipulations with that. And this is part of the law and regulations is that my time as an officer was cut in half, which is a bit odd to think about, but my time overall has not. So my time in service is the same, but my time as an officer was cut in half as the stipulation for joining the Medical Service Corps.
What does that mean, cut in half?
Let's say I'm 8 years as an officer. That means I get cut in half to 4 years as an officer.
So when you transferred, you went back to being only 4 years. So if you, help me out with this one, if you were a lieutenant commander at the time of transfer, and by cutting your time in half, it would have legally, according to Black and White Ink, meant you did not have enough time to be a lieutenant commander, would they roll you back to lieutenant?
That's correct. And that has happened before.
Oh my gosh.
I'm assuming there's a specific reason why this is part of the overall law. So I don't know much about the history behind that. But either way, I was at 8 years roughly. So going back to four, I was a lieutenant regardless. But the only thing is just my timing is off, not off, but it's realigned. So some of my peers who are now lieutenant commanders, I'm catching up to them in regards to my time in rank just because it changed to that.
Yes. Very interesting. I did not know about that stipulation.
Yeah, some of the communities are different. So if you're looking to lat transfer, just make sure you look at the regulations and follow the string there and where it takes you for that. And of course, you know, I've talked to the community manager and other people within that, but I understood that coming in of what I wanted to do. And just a lot of great people within that community, great mentors as well, and looking for somebody to join their community that had a technical expertise that I had and wanted to do good as well for not just the nation, the Navy, and of course, increasing that soft power around the world. So part of that stipulation of lat transferring to Medical Service Corps included coming to Naval Postgraduate School, MPS. And that's why I am here.
That was your master's.
That was my master's. 2022 got here.
Okay.
As part of the Network Operations and Technology graduate degree for the Information Science Department. Kind of a mouthful. Sounds like, what is Network Operations Technology? NWAT, as they called it for short. Really, it's information systems engineering is what it is, management, things of that nature. And the pipeline for us was, after this tour, go be a chief information officer for a naval health or a health clinic in that regard. But there was an opportunity to continue along here for the PhD, and that's what I continue to do. I put in for it, and the department, the information science department, was very supportive, the school supportive, and said, hey, we see you doing great things already for your research and your master's. Why don't you continue on for your research now? for the PhD, and here I am today.
Wow, that is quite a journey, and one I have not heard of before. So thank you for telling me that. I don't think I knew that about you this whole time that we've known each other. That's crazy.
A very unconventional and circuitous route to get where I am. And it's interesting to talk to my peers in different communities. I think that's one of the beauty of the service, right? If you look for something, there's opportunities for you. There are opportunities, and it's a matter of finding where they are and having the right mentors and leadership to get to you where you're at. But there was a point where I thought I was going to get out, and that was on the comfort as well. And like I said, I was there at the right time, met the right people, and I'm happy that I've continued along for my service. So either side of the fence, whether you're in the service, outside of the service, just find your goals, and you can do that within as a stepping stone. You can do that outside of the service as well.
So we've kind of talked about some impactful moments, obviously the comfort for you. In your entire career, can you think of maybe three specific most impactful moments, how they were impactful, why they were impactful, and what impact did they have? Like, what was the change?
Yeah, we can start from the beginning. The most impactful, I think, was being in Seventh Fleet. And thinking about any issues in Indo-Pacific seems far away when you are in the United States. Even stationed here, it just seems very, very far away. But when you're out there floating in the South China Sea and you have a Chinese destroyer off your side of your ship, it's a different kind of perspective that you have. And it was great to see the group of us on the destroyer, which isn't very many people, hundreds of people, right? 300 maybe max, right? Including the aviation team on board. To see everybody come together for a common goal and understand what power projection means at that point. That also includes being a diplomat as well, because we pull into ports. We are an ambassador there as well. And it was great to see a lot of these people on board the ship really become family and understand the requirements and responsibilities of that. You're asking a lot for 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, not only to man these equipment that are hundreds of millions, maybe billions of dollars driving the ship, to also be ambassadors on behalf of the nation. So it was great to see that aspect for that. Second one, I would say, was on the Ford. Similarly, it was a very challenging and demanding tour, but we came together to ensure that we had a safe operational reactor, brand new. So it almost was like a startup culture where you have long hours, which isn't unusual in the Navy or any profession that's challenging and demanding. But we were building some of the policies and procedures on board to ensure that we have the orchestral processes in place. There was a steep learning curve for some of those things.
Not only were you building, you were QAing at the same time, which is very difficult.
That's right. Yep. So we were ensuring that we had the, of course, we were using procedures for the plant and things like that, but we were tailoring them specifically to what we've seen, because what's in the laboratory is very different in the field. And then we had a close connection with the shipyard for our team, and some people have different interactions with shipyard staff, but I had a great experience with the shipyard staff on my end and building out some of the equipment, some of the technical manuals, things of that nature. So I came to the fort owning the reactor networking division, which was one of the first that we had in the Navy. And that included the propulsion plant, local air network. And then it also included some other aspects. So the supervisory control and data acquisition system as well. So these were all networks involved with the reactor in an industrial setting. So it was great to have that experience and building up that new culture that we thought was important for building up a new division and the new department. I eventually was the reactor maintenance officer as well, which is mostly a senior billet for more technically minded LDOs. But we had somebody leave suddenly and they asked me if I wanted to fill that billet. And I rogered up right away because I like a challenge, and it was a fun experience for that. So I helped manage the billion-dollar A-1B reactor down there. A-1B is different reactors have different acronyms for that. I forget what A-1B stands for. I'm a terrible SWO nuke now.
I don't know. So not
yeah,
that terrible.
So yeah, that was a great experience. Very challenging, of course. And the third really was the comfort, seeing people come together. And to be quite frank, people who come on board the comfort, it's their first time for a lot of them. They've never been out to sea. And this is a lot of medical folks who work in the hospitals and the clinics, things like that. Their entire tour in the Navy could just be in a hospital. They don't go out to sea at all. I'm not disparaging if you're going to sea or not, but it's just the reality for them. So they would come on board and be a brand new experience for them. And these are some senior ranking people, but perhaps not senior in the Navy, just because they came in the Navy with a certain rank because they're a doctor or a surgeon or things of that nature. And then this went back to the previous discussion in regards to forming a team. Seeing everybody come together for a common mission, a common goal on both the civilian mariner side, who have to manage a very older steam plant down there, there, among other things, and everybody come together for a common goal. So those three things, I think the highlight, the theme for all three of those is coming together for a common goal, a common purpose, and just crushing it.
I love that feeling too. So while you're here at NPS for your second time, this is a question I ask myself all the time. What do you want to get out of your tour here at NPS this second time around?
I think about that a lot. There's an opportunity that we have here to not just better ourselves educationally and career-wise, of course, but these are going to be impacts that we will bring as officers with a military-focused education, not just back to the service, but eventually, because we all get out eventually, back into the civilian world as well. So what is my impact in regards to that? I think being a medical service corps officer with a subspecialty in health information systems allows me now to have more of a thought on how can I develop research or further research that helps the warfighter in the healthcare domain, which allows also other opportunities to help perhaps healthcare systems overall in different domains such as civilian things like that. We were the largest healthcare provider in the world, DoD's largest organization in the world. So the impact that you have here also can have impact outside of the service as well. So my intent within the gates of Naval Postgraduate School is that gaining the skill sets, of course, to further my career progression, but of course, giving back to the service as well, which brings me to outside of the gates of Naval Postgraduate School. We're a small dot within the peninsula, within the Bay Area, and it's easy to be ensconced within the gates and kind of forget about the community at large. But it's a wonderful community, and with less and less people in the service, I think it's especially important to make those connections, as you know, outside of the gates of NPS. So a couple different things to be a bottom line up front, as we say in the military, is career progression, academic progression here within the gates, making an impact, and then ensuring that an impact also goes outside of the lifelines to the community at large.
Love it. And then we've covered kind of what you want to do here at NPS. As you are right now in this moment, looking at the rest of your future career, what do you want your legacy to be when you retire?
For my research, I really want to ensure that we can have a healthcare system that is not just manageable, but accessible for the warfighter. So we've implemented various healthcare system upgrades, Genesis, that we've all experienced now. And we're still working on that. So I hope that I can develop, as part of my research and dissertation, techniques, tactics, procedures, algorithms that ensures that we can still have a state-of-the-art healthcare system that meets what the patient needs and the current patient requirements. Now, what does that entail? I'm still working on that.
Sure. That's why you're here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm still very new to the PhD program. So I saw this meme where it was a Schrodinger's trash can as a PhD student. Like, it's always full, it's overflowing, but it's never full enough. And also it's on fire.
So that's so accurate.
Yeah, so I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. I have about another year still to kind of figure out what I want to do my dissertation on and things like that. But definitely ensure that I'm doing something that has an impact, contributing to that body of knowledge that all PhD students are adding to, and ensuring that it contributes back to the community.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and taking some time out of your very busy schedule to have this episode where you can get to know you a little bit better. And I look forward to all the future episodes that you're going to host. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I thank you for the opportunity once again. And I look forward to continuing along with this podcast team.
All right. See you soon.
Thanks for joining us in the Trident Room. For more information about today's guests and topics, please visit the show notes online at nps.edu/Trident Room Podcast. The Trident Room Podcast has been brought to you by the Naval Postgraduate School Alumni Association and Foundation. For questions, comments, and suggestions, please email us at TridentRoomPodcastHost@nps.edu.